Right now I'm sat with Ian Walmsley, who is the founder of The Planning Geek.
That's what I did. I started with one page. That is now over 500 pages of information, and it grows every week. I have enforcement officers, I have planning officers reach out to me and say, Ian, can you just clarify? I'm not too sure.
What's your conversion rate of success when you put in an application?
Over 90%.
Damn.
I don't like refusals.
There's so much confusion around Article 4.
Yeah.
Because people don't realise there's hundreds of different types of Article 4.
Yeah. Get professional advice.
Yeah.
I wish people would come and talk to me first before going down the rabbit hole.
Talk to me a little bit about serviced accommodation.
It doesn't exist.
Right now I'm sat with Ian Walmsley, who is the founder of The Planning Geek. He knows all the intricacies into planning permission, Article 4, permitted development rights, how to get planning permission, how to submit appeals accurately, and I'm going to be picking his brain about permitted development, Article 4, planning permission, and hopefully you'll be learning a packed full of knowledge in this interview with Ian Walmsley. Ian, thank you so much for coming on.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
So we've just had breakfast and you've been talking to me about some of the things that you're doing, and it's super fascinating, and I think anybody that's in property needs a good planning consultant by their side. So talk to me first a little bit about what you do and what is The Planning Geek?
Sure. So Planning Geek I formed back in 2017, mainly because I was fed up with all the inaccurate information on the interwebby.
Yeah.
And that is still true now. I think anybody has to be very wise and careful about the advice that they take from whatever source. And so I began Planning Geek to pretty much give us a resource for accurate, correct information.
Mm.
And so for me, it was an outlet for me to actually educate people and to guide them in the right direction. It was as simple as that. And I tell you exactly why I started it. We were doing a renovation. My wife and I were doing a renovation up in Lancashire. And the couple across the road applied for planning permission to do, I think it was a dormer, rear dormer, a side window and a loft, a rear extension, and they got refused. And I remember going across to their house. This was probably 2016 or thereabouts. And I went across to the house and I said, look, do you realise that you could have done this under PD?
Mm.
And they turned around and said, no, we've been told we need planning. I said, well, you're wrong. But I couldn't back it up with anything. I really couldn't back it up. And so they then went back in for planning with a reduced scheme, much smaller, and got it approved. But they could have avoided the planning system altogether by simply going ahead without going anywhere near the local authority and just using their PD rights. Wow. And they were unaware of this. But the thing is, there wasn't a resource available to educate and tell them exactly what they could and couldn't do.
Yes.
And so I thought, well, I'll start with one page. And that's what I did. I started with one page.
Mm.
And that is now over 500 pages of information, and it grows every week. I keep writing new pages, and I've got a list as long as your arm still to write, because it will never. It's a bit like pain that's in a fourth road bridge. You'll never quite get to the end of it.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's a challenge to actually put into plain English anything that could be extremely confusing for the average person, but also for the local authorities as well. And it's not just the end user, it's not just Joe Public who can benefit. If the local authority, who are overstretched, under-resourced, and struggling themselves, and at the end of the day, you know, somebody could be a planning officer, and, you know, and then they're not always, no one knows everything.
Yeah.
But what I've tried to do over the years is to actually put it into plain English, so that anybody can understand it.
Yes, and it's amazing because I've been an observer and a fan and a using Planning Geek for years. And when I first saw stuff on Planning Geek, I thought, like, okay, let me check if that's correct. So I'd go and I'd speak to my planning consultant, try and find out from the council. But over the years, I thought, this is always correct. Like, this is brilliant. And I was using it, and that's why I reached out to you.
Yeah.
And obviously, we've now connected. But I spoke to a guy just a few weeks ago, just the exact same story. He wanted to build a dormer at the back.
Yeah.
And he said to me, oh, I'm putting forward the planning application. And his planning consultant told him to do it.
Yeah.
And he spent thousands on it. And I was like, I don't think you have to do that. You can get permitted development.
40 cubic meters measured externally. Right. This is why I'm a geek, sorry.
Yeah.
40 meters externally on a semi or a terraced, and 50 on a detached property.
Right.
So, yes, it's measured externally, as long as you keep 20 centimeters away from the eaves. Yeah, it's PD. The secret PD, or permitted development, which is part of the GPDO, General Permitted Development Order 2015, as amended, is the fact that it's a tick box exercise, pretty much.
Right.
And so as long as you stick to each of the requirements, you know, A, B, C, D, E, and F, whatever they are, you must stick to those. You must never go over them.
Yeah.
It's critical you do not go over them.
Give me an example. So you instead of going 3 meters, you go 3.1.
Yeah, exactly. You go, right. So let's say, and I have had this. So I had a client come to me in North London. Recently, they had enforcement down to say that their extension was illegal. And they consulted me. They booked a session with me on Zoom. And I had to unfortunately tell them the fact, yes, it was. And their only option, believe it or not, was to demolish the extension
out
and rebuild it correctly.
Yeah,
he hadn't done himself any favors because he'd actually built across the party wall as well.
Oh.
So there was more than just the depth, but the depth alone, you can't have retrospective PD. So you can't actually, once it's complete, you can't go back and correct it and chop a bit off just to make it compliant, because those are the rules. So yeah, as long as you stick to the rules, you know, you are fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you drive a car, okay? You have to stick to the rules, we're supposed to anyway, but you're supposed to stick to the rules in able to drive that. And nobody's then going to say, you can't drive that car, Samuel, because you're sticking to those rules. You're not entering a test every 6 months to actually have the ability to drive that car.
So if you get planning permission, if you don't get planning permission to do something, let's say you build a house and you didn't get planning, am I right in thinking that you, if they don't notice, after I think it's 10 years or 12 years?
10 years now, it's 10 years.
10 years?
Used to be, if it was substantially complete before the 25th of April of 2024, then it's a 4-year period.
4 years only?
But it had to be substantially complete before that date.
Wow.
It's now a 10-year rule. So now enforcement have 10 years to come after you for a lot of things. Now, there are a few nuances there, and it also can depend upon the land it's on and stuff like that. So there are some other issues.
Right.
But I'm sure lots of people can remember a guy called Mr. Fiddler.
Yeah.
And if you don't know who Mr. Fiddler is, he was a guy that built a house behind some straw bales, left it there for a few years, and then took the bales away and said, oh, I've got this nice big house. But that was his name, Mr. Fiddler. And the reason that his failed was he did not do it in plain sight. So you can't hide it.
Right.
So you can't hide that. If you hid it, it's not in plain sight.
Intentionally hid it? Or would this be counted as hidden because there's a private gate?
No, it would have to be intentionally hidden.
Right.
I mean, it's all very well having a private gate or whatever, that's fine.
Mm.
I mean, you could build an extension, but these are days, local authorities have access to ways and means to see whether someone's building something on their land without permission.
Yeah.
You know, we have satellites, nothing's secret anymore anywhere pretty much in the world. And so therefore, you know, they can look at pre-detailed stuff.
Yeah.
And it's normally the only time when it becomes a problem is when people have complaints.
Yes.
So if you upset your neighbour, always get on with your neighbours. Whatever you do, make sure you get on with them, because they can make your life hell, basically, because they will just come along and say, look, you know, Mrs. Miggins next door has moaned about me having this extension because she's got fed up with the builders' vans or whatever, blocking the road. And it's that's when you get issues.
And it's certainly not something that I would teach people to do, but sometimes forgiveness is better than permission.
Yeah.
And you do have historical, if you can leave it there, but the best thing to do is to learn the rules of the game and play to win. And permitted development is a game changer. I think it came in, am I right in thinking, in 2008, and it's just got more and more.
No, I mean, it's been around since the 90s.
Really?
I mean, PD is nothing new.
Okay.
I mean, if you go onto the Planet Geek website, you'll actually have a timeline going all the way back, and I actually have all the permitted development rights.
Wow.
All the way back to when it started. Planning pretty much started in this country in 1948. So right. 1st July 1948.
So permitted development has been around.
It's nothing new.
I thought it came in 2008.
No.
Maybe nothing. They just brought a bunch of new things.
Nothing's new. It evolves.
Yeah.
So the latest incarnation is 2015.
Yeah.
It's supposed to get changed every 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So which would have been in 2020. But obviously there were certain things going on in the world in 2020 and I think Boris's attention was elsewhere at the time,
okay.
probably with kids, I don't know. But the point is the fact that, yeah, we haven't, so we're still, it's very much sticking plasters.
Right. So let's say I'm a property investor, right, and I don't know anything about planning, permitted development, nothing at all. What are some of the key things that you can do with permitted development? I'm not talking about agricultural land. I'm talking about just normal stuff.
Bog standard.
What are some of the key things to save people clogging up the planning department by putting forward, spending money, wasting time and resources on planning applications that are completely unnecessary? What are some of the key things you can do?
So there's a lot of things that are PD, which people don't even realise. So, all right, it's not so much now because we're going online, but if Sky came along and put up a dish, they are putting that under a permitted development right.
Mm-hmm.
So that is PD. If you paint your house, it's a PD right. If you put up a fence, that's a PD right.
Mm.
So you can have 1 meter against a highway, 2 meter fence elsewhere. So a highway is basically a public road. It's an open road. And so therefore, you know, these are all standard PD rights. But then from that, you can either have a 3 or 4 meter rear extension, for example.
Right.
So 3 meter on a terraced or semi, 4 meters on a detached.
That's huge, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can make, if the kitchen's small and you can extend at the back a few meters and suddenly you've got a whole new downstairs area without planning permission, it's huge.
So why stop at that? So you then use a larger homes extension, you can double that.
Mm-hmm.
The only difference with a larger homes extension is it's a simple 5 week application to local authority, and providing that the neighbours who are directly connected to your property do not object, you'll get that permission.
Right.
So you may be able to go out 8 meters on a property. You can use up to 50% of your curtilage, which is basically the land around your house. So back garden, front garden, size, etc. So 50% of your curtilage can be used for garden sheds. Decking, for example, is an outbuilding. It's above 30 centimetres. But all these come into your allowance for extensions and outbuildings.
It's worth checking with a consultant how far you can go back, because you might think you can only go 3 meters, but actually you can go further.
Well, yes, exactly. The thing is, if you don't know, you don't know.
Yeah.
And PD is like that. And quite often people make mistakes of perhaps going, and there's no offense to architectural people or architects or anything else, but the problem is, if you go and ask, this is why I say never go and ask a local authority. Don't even go and ask a local authority what the use of your building is. Because they do not keep a register. There's no register anywhere of uses. It's effectively the last legal use of your building.
Mm.
So we are sitting in a house at the moment. It's a C3 dwelling. Okay? So that is the last legal use of the building. If we had we had breakfast earlier, and that was a restaurant, so use class E. Now, if that restaurant shut down and some squatters moved in and made it their house, it doesn't become a residential dwelling. It's still a use class E, despite the fact that somebody's saying, well, this is my home now because I'm moving in because it's empty, you know, squatters in offices and stuff like that. It doesn't change the use of that.
One of the things that worries me, Ian, is when people use ChatGPT to ask questions about everything, actually, commercial valuations, but planning, how accurate is AI?
The problem is, now, back in the 80s, I used to do programming, and we used to have an expression of GIGO, garbage in, garbage out.
Right.
And the problem is, any search engine, any AI, anything else has to get its information from somewhere. And the problem is, I mentioned this right at the beginning of this interview, and I said the reason I started Planning Geek was because of the poor information out there.
Yeah.
And the problem is that even the AI engines have had to educate themselves on other people's websites. Mm-hmm. They don't just, it doesn't just appear in their brains and sort of they regurgitate it.
Right.
They're actually pulling the information from various resources. And the problem is, if that information is inaccurate, then they will give out inaccurate information. So quite often, if you do a Google search, you will appear at the top of that. You will get a summary by the Google AI, whatever engine it is behind it, and it will make some assumptions.
Yeah.
And there'll be a caveat at the bottom saying, we cannot guarantee this information, you must test it for yourself, et cetera, et cetera. And the problem is, quite often I see inaccurate information even produced by an AI engine, because people will come to me, they'll post on my Facebook group and say, oh, you know, it says X, Y, and Z. And I say, no, that's just not true.
Yeah.
So verify your information. Now, I Planning Geek will always be up to date. I'll always manage to keep it. If legislation happens, alters, that will get changed within an hour or two of it being laid before Parliament.
We appreciate your service, by the way. As property investors, I use all the time. And SEO, you search something, you've got some SEO guy who's 19 years old who's studying at university, could be writing junk, and that AI is scraping that.
Of course.
And people are just being misfed information. Of course.
And so, you know, we have around about 100,000 unique visitors per month to the site. So there's an awful lot of people using Planning Geek. And so, I mean, for example, when something happened on, it was laid before Parliament on the 30th of April of last year. 1st of May, it happened to be my birthday. I was up at 4 o'clock that morning updating the website so that when people came in to their offices, wherever, at 9 o'clock, it was all bang up to date and they could refer to it. Mm-hmm. And I have a watch 24/7 on government information, so I get that information first.
Well, people say you can Google everything. You can't. You need professional people in your
team. No, you have to. Well, you have to understand what you're searching for, even with AI.
Yeah.
If you don't give it the right prompts and don't ask it the right things, you won't get the right answers.
Yeah.
And we were talking about, just briefly, but we were talking about the 4-year and 10-year rule earlier.
Mm.
Now, often, if you actually look at a 7-year rule, you will find people quoting 7 years. 7 years actually applies to Ireland.
Right.
And so they've looked at that information, and there are still people now saying there's a 7-year rule. Never has been in this country. It's an Irish rule. So just be, what I'm saying to folk, just be careful. Mm-hmm. About where you get your information from, especially with AI. It's not the answer to everything, and you just need to, because if you get it wrong, enforcement will say, I don't care whether ChatGPT told you this or not. That is not lawful, and you're going to have to demolish it. And if you don't demolish it, you can end up in court or in prison, because if you don't listen to me, ChatGPT is not going to help you if you break the law. So just be careful, folks.
Right. I think that, talking of commercial property, permitted development on commercial properties turned to residential, that is something that is very, very, very common.
Yeah.
What's the best way to go about that? How can you tell on a commercial property if you will be able to turn it?
So the first thing is, you must understand the use class of that building. So it's very important that you understand the legal use of it. So in most cases, that will probably be use class E.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be a shop, restaurant, office, cafe, gym, even a GP surgery, a nursery. These will all be use class E. So use class E allows you to use what's called class MA to go to use class C3. The problem with all these, I'm saying class an awful lot.
Yeah.
And the problem is that the government uses historically the word class to almost have a usage or permission or something else. So it does get a little bit confusing when we say use class E and then class MA, but it's really just a subsection of some legislation that the government's laid down.
So talking in simple terms, you've got a commercial property, maybe it's an office block. How do you work out if you can turn that into a small apartment block?
Right. So first off, you need to, just check its use class E.
Which it probably is.
But never assume anything.
Right.
To assume just makes an ass out of you and me. So never assume anything in property and planning especially. then you can use Class MA to turn that into residential. There is no limit now. There used to be a 1,500 square meter limit. That's now gone. You do not need it to be empty. You used to have that requirement. You don't anymore. So you can go ahead and get that permission. Now, the other thing you want to make sure is that in some boroughs, in some London boroughs and elsewhere, sort of cities, that sort of thing, Class MA rights have been removed by what's called an Article 4. So the local authority will make an Article 4 direction removing some PD rights.
Sure.
Now, in the conservation area, that may stop you from painting your house anything but pink in that seaside town or whatever. An Article 4 can block absolutely anything. So you just got to make sure there's no Article 4 in that area blocking Class MA.
Can I just have an Article 4? Mm. Because there's so much confusion about Article 4.
Yeah.
Because people don't realise there's hundreds of different types of Article 4.
Yep.
So they might be wanting to do a C3 house and to convert it into a six-bed HMO.
Yep.
And they type in, is there Article 4? Oh, there is. Oh, I can't do it. Indeed. Actually, no. That Article 4 is permitting Class MA.
Exactly.
It's nothing to do with HMOs.
Or disallowing it. Exactly. So you,
yeah,
you have to understand. So a useful URL for people, if you go to Article 4 with the number 4, .co.uk, you'll go to the Article 4 area of my site.
Right.
Okay. And on there, I actually describe exactly what an Article 4 is. And I'm currently enlarging that part of it. So it is important to understand what that Article 4 blocks. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned HMOs, for example. Interesting. So that is Class L, allows you to go from C3 to C4.
Yeah.
When you move your third person in, it automatically becomes a C4. There's no need for permissions or anything else. It's an automatic right. But that Article 4 blocks you from going from C3 to C4. Interestingly, 95% of them do not block you from going from C4 to C3. So you have to be aware of that.
Right.
So that even though you've got an Article 4 in place, it is possible to reverse that.
Right.
So you've got to be a little bit careful, but that's probably for another time. But
so if you've got Article 4 permitting you to do HMOs, then you can't just buy a house and rent it out room by room.
No.
Because there's Article 4.
Indeed.
But if there's no Article 4 specifically around HMOs, how do you get permission, or do you just do it?
You just do it.
Why is there differences between permitted development? Some things you just do it.
Mm.
Like, for instance, if you want to build at the side, if you want to do a dormer at the back, you just do it.
Yep.
But then other things, like if you want to turn a Class E building into apartments, you have to get prior approval.
I think it's pretty much because of the fact that to create a new dwelling requires planning permission. All right. So it requires some form of planning to create a new dwelling. And so if you're splitting a house into flats, you need planning. And therefore, the local authority has to check for things like the fact that, is there enough parking, for example. So if you are creating, let's say, six new properties in effect by that six bed HMO or six person HMO. Importantly, it's people and not rooms, okay? So, and therefore you may, in some situations, create an additional parking issue locally.
Yeah.
So they restrict it via an Article 4 to say, actually here, there's going to be too much issues with traffic, or there's a density problem. Now, having said that, even though if there's an Article 4 in place, we have successfully got planning in many Article 4 areas.
Right.
Either standard Article 4 standard HMO or sui generis HMO, 7 and above.
Yeah. Here's something where I was wrong and you had to call me out on it. I thought that to get a HMO sui generis, 7 or above, you always need planning permission.
No.
That's news to me.
So
it's good news.
Literally, on the way here, so we were just coming from breakfast this morning here, and I just got informed the fact that a case that I was involved in probably about three or four weeks ago now, successfully has now a seven-person HMO without planning permission. That's now a sui generis.
How?
It's because there's no material change, okay? So this has... Not a lot of people know this, I must admit, but I'm slowly educating them. And what I'm doing at the moment is I'm actually compiling a a record of every single successful appeal that has gone on in England since whenever, you know. And so what the argument is the fact that that seventh person does not make a material change to that property. Okay. In the same way, now this doesn't just apply for, say, HMOs. It can apply for anything. We've had success going from a C3 to a C2, a care home, by arguing the fact that actually there is no material change by going from C3 to C2, and we do not need to go through the planning system to change that to a C2. And so we are using exactly the same logic from, say, going from a, in an Article 4, say going from 2 to 3 people in the Article 4 area, because that third person is not going to make a material change, and from going from 6 to 7. Now, the same logic would apply, say, from going from 7 to 8 people. If you're going, say, adding 2, it pushes a little bit, you know, you're stretching it a little bit. To say there's no material change, but even that can be possible. But yeah, it's successful.
That's fantastic news, though.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people. I was speaking at an event just about probably a month or so ago. In fact, just before I went down to this one in Kent for his client, and I spoke at that event and said basically, you don't need planning. Well, I asked the question, given the information I'd already given, it's purely on HMOs. Who thinks you always need planning to go from a C4 to a sui generis? Everybody in that room put their hand up.
Probably because they've all learned from me.
Maybe.
But it's news to me.
Maybe. Well, if you don't know, you don't know.
No.
And so, you know, and the next slide I brought up, it just says, may you be not. And, you know,
there has been no material change.
Yes. It's not just a case of you can't just go ahead and do it. So don't just think, oh, I'll just move the seventh person
in. Is it like prior approval, is it?
No, it's just the fact that you put in what's called a certificate of lawfulness.
Right.
So we touched on that earlier.
Yeah.
And so a certificate of lawfulness is something to say, is what I'm doing or what I've already done, so either what I'm about to do or what I've done, lawful and doesn't need planning, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so quite often you will find that the local authority will refuse it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, majority of cases, they will refuse it, especially where HMOs are concerned. But if it doesn't make a material difference, then you appeal that. You appeal that refusal, and you let the inspectorate make the decision.
Right.
So on this client site, who, as I say, literally an hour ago got confirmation that appeal had gone through successfully. I turned up at the house, the inspector was there, the local authority was there as well, and I'm glad I was there because, you know, I think that the local authority would probably have tried to get a word in and make a comment or two, but, you know, I was able to demonstrate, even though I'd never been inside the building before, I was able to demonstrate the fact that, you know, there wasn't a pressure on the area or on the house for that extra seventh person. And that's an important factor. So, for example, if you've got a 6-bed in perhaps a row of terraces, then that seventh person may well make a material difference. In other words, noise coming from that building, because you've got a property on either side, you may make a bit of a difference. This was a semi-detached. Okay, so if you've got a semi-detached, I think it's less of a problem. If you've got parking, it's going to be less of a problem. If parking's an issue around there, then yes, it may not work. So I think it's not just a you know, a open season for all and saying, well, just everyone can do it.
Yeah,
I think you need to be careful, and this is where a good planning consultant will come into their own, understands it.
Yeah.
And as I say, you know, we've had a good track record on this so far, and this is what I'm compiling a page on at the moment, to educate people and to say, look, this is possible, but it's possible within the realms of legislation as it stands.
Yeah, but the difference between having seven people in your property and six could be quite a big difference from a cash flow perspective.
Oh,
and okay. If you don't realise that you could potentially do it, just knowing that it's a possibility and having a conversation with a consultant and being able to go, fantastic. And I mean, that's what I do. I just surround myself with experts. You know, you need people in your team. You can, I'll never know as much as you about planning. You are the planning geek.
Yeah.
You know, you've become the authority as well. Like the fact that even the councils are reading your website to educate themselves.
They contact me. This is a true story. Now, people can believe it or not. It's up to them. But I have head of plannings. I have enforcement officers. I have planning officers reach out to me often for advice and say, Ian, can you just clarify? I'm not too sure as to whether this is correct or not.
Yeah.
You know, I had one just not so long ago asking about use class, and it was to do with a tanning salon. You know, what is the use class? Is this E? And it is, because of the fact there's a line in it that says, and for any other use which is appropriate to provide in a commercial, business or residential area.
Yeah.
And so now this encompasses a lot of uses which before never used to. So vets, for example. So if you ever look at a vets or a massage parlour, a tattoo parlour, anything like this, was always a sui generis in the past. Now, I've called it and said it's now a use class E. So one of the things on my site is although I said earlier, there is no register. There is no local register at all. There used to be a gazette many, many years ago. A gazetteer many years ago. Woefully out of date. But I actually have, I think I have something around about 300 different uses which I've allocated a use class to. So it gives people an idea.
Yeah.
So if you do a Google search for certain things, then the chance
you'll come up at the top.
It'll come up, yes.
You know that the rules are always changing. I remember a few years ago learning all the different A1, A2, and then suddenly they just said, no, it's all class E, which was brilliant news, and it was a relief, and it made it more simple. But I'm like, man, I just spent all this time learning all these different... Yes. So the rules are always changing. Talk to me a little bit about serviced accommodation, because that is the council's...
It doesn't exist.
In what sense?
There is no use class
right.
for serviced accommodation.
Yeah.
Now, I know it exists. I know, you know, I'm being a little bit flippant here, but it doesn't exist from a use class.
Well, it's generally either C3 or C1, isn't it? Generally,
Or sui generis. The problem is, if you ask a local authority, they will often not commit themselves as to what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so they will turn around often and, well, this is why you don't contact the local authority. So what is happening quite often is the fact that somebody will make a complaint.
Yeah.
And then they'll complain about the property, and then the local authority will look at it, and quite often then they will enforce. And unfortunately, we are seeing a rapid increase. I was probably before getting maybe one a month inquiring or seeking my advice. I'm probably now getting two a week.
Yeah.
So there is a big ramp up all of a sudden. Now, we were going to have... Just before Sunak got all soaking wet and down the street and threw in the towel, we were going to have a use class C5,
yes,
which would have made it a lot easier and a lot simpler, and it would have allowed you to go from, say, C3 to C5.
Without planning.
Without,
same as HMO.
It would be in a PD. It would be in a PD right to go from C3 to C5.
And certain towns might say, no, we don't want it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I currently live in the southwest, and if you go down to Cornwall, they have a big problem with, you know, with the cost of housing down there because of short-term rentals and stuff like that. So often local authorities will pigeonhole it into like C1, which is a hotel.
Yeah.
Others seem to be okay as a C3, and others wanted to sui generis, and there doesn't really seem to be a policy that is central even to local authorities.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think it's down to individual officers who think, do you know what? I really don't want an SA in that particular location. I don't want that service accommodation there. So, yeah, I'm going to enforce.
How can they do that, though? How can the council, and I've seen this happen to some of my students where they've got a property, the neighbours complain, and then they just go, you can't do it as service accommodation. Because what rule are they breaking? Under what authority?
It's the definition of a C3. So a C3 is... one person living there as a single household, and that is their primary residence. Okay. Yeah. And therefore, that is, if they don't seek that to be a C3 and they think, well, it's a hotel use, which is basically a B&B, a guest house, you know, boarding house, stuff like that would be a C1. And so basically what they'll say is, well, we don't think your usage is as a C3, doesn't come under C3A, which is a, you know, what we're in at the moment, where you and I live,
yeah.
C3A. And so they'll simply make a decision because they don't want it there. They simply do not want it there.
It's very grey though, isn't it? Sure, you can put your house on Airbnb. It's your house.
Yeah, you'd have thought that you can do whatever you like to your property, but the problem is the fact that you will also find that when that house got planning permission, that was given planning permission for a particular use. And you have to bear in mind is that virtually everything, I know we talked about, you know, building without planning earlier, but you have to bear in mind is that practically every building you walk past, go into, whatever, has had planning at some point, or has had some approval under a PD right, which is in effect your planning permission. So you have to really go back and look at the original planning permission to see what the conditions were.
I think the big question is, if they do bring in C5, which I think would generally be a good thing, because it makes it,
I agree.
As you say, service accommodation doesn't exist. And in the planning world, it doesn't.
100%. I mean, obviously, if you put in C5, you'll get a page on Planning Geek.
Yeah, which will be soon. And the Conservatives were talking about it. And then Labour haven't said a thing.
No, they haven't. But I think at the moment, there is no pressure on Labour. So on the current government, when a government starts to lose perhaps their majority or stuff like that, we tend to find that they tend to want to give a little bit back. And so this is when we tend to see, when they're under pressure, they want to give a little bit back.
It was under consultation.
Oh, everything's been under consultation. Yeah. We've had wraparound extensions under consultation.
And turning a house into two flats?
No.
Go on.
No. That was never under consultation.
What happened
all.
Then? Where did it get to?
That was merely a statement in the autumn budget or autumn statement 3 or 4 years ago, well, two or three years ago.
That.
Yeah, whenever it was, but it was the autumn statement. And it's saying, look, we're considering this and we will bring it forward for consultation in January.
But it never happened.
It never happened.
That's terrible.
And various people jumped on the bandwagon straight away, said, hey, it's a magic thing, it's a great thing. We're doing the video and this is the next best thing.
No, but it's news. Like, people need to know what's going on. As long as you're clear on it's not happened.
But the thing is, what I base my site and my stuff on facts.
Yeah, I agree.
And I will only give out, I didn't make one post on that.
Yeah.
At all.
I did. I made one post. Did you see it? Were you digging at me just there?
No, I wasn't digging. No, actually, it wasn't, you'd be honest. No.
I was very clear, though. I said, this may or may not happen.
No.
This is what they're talking about.
But people were, and even now, I get people coming onto my Facebook group and saying, oh, yeah, I've heard about it. Is it coming yet? No, it was never even consulted.
Fake news.
Yes. And it was just it's a bit like saying, well, you know, we're going to do this, going to do that. Well, until it's brought forward in legislation, it hasn't happened.
Well, it's like Labour saying they're going to reform the whole planning system. In a way, that's fake news because there's nothing happening. They're saying that. And I was excited about that.
Yeah.
You know, I actually had hopes because, you know, I've got a lot of land that I'm waiting on planning and I was excited about that, but nothing happened.
I mean, at the end of the day, yes, there are certain changes, you know, sort of grey belt and stuff like this, but a lot of this is... It's hard for me not to say propaganda to a degree.
Right.
And I, you know, people will say he's talking out his backside again. But the point is the fact that a lot of this is, I think, it's fine if you're one of the big boys. I think if you've been sitting on land and that you can put that forward now. But to the average person, it's really not going to make a difference. However, what is going to make a big difference is PD.
Yes.
So something in the region of 20,000 new dwellings a year are created under permitted development.
That's incredible.
It's an awful lot. The government cannot afford to lose that because, in effect, it's 10% of the annual what we're getting at the moment. Now, they've said 1.5 million in the lifetime of Parliament. Well,
they keep saying it.
We're sort of, you know, have many months in now.
Yeah.
best part of a year almost.
How many did you say? How many new homes with P-Day?
20,000.
20,000. Do you think, is that like existing buildings being turned into apartments?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much, it's commercial conversion.
They're not making,
stuff like
they're not
that.
Building new properties.
No. Well, you can. So you've got airspace, so you've got the ability to put floors on top.
Yeah.
You've got the ability to take a detached building, office building perhaps, and or factory and demolish that. And so there are certain PD rights to create in airspace.
It was only recent, wasn't it, when they extended the, because it used to be a cap on PD with commercial to residential in terms of the square footage, which they scrapped. I think that was like last 59 year.
59 square metres, yes. Yeah. And you had to have the occupancy for, you had to be empty for 3 months.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, did you know, for example, you can extend a commercial building?
I mean,
under PD?
Not the ins and outs.
No, but you can.
Right.
But the point is, these are things which people do not, it's PD which people do not understand or even know exists.
Mm.
So if you've got a commercial building, and perhaps you're, you know, not everything is about commercial to resi.
Yeah.
You may have a commercial strategy and want to extend. You may want to, if you've got an industrial unit or storage, for example, storage and distribution, B8, you can actually put a new building in those grounds within the curtilage of that building without planning.
It's awesome.
And rent it out. And so, you know, you've got commercial opportunities under PD.
Yeah.
People think PD is a dormer or re-extension.
Mm.
It goes beyond that.
How many types of PD are there?
Well, over 200.
Over
200. There's 21 classes, or 21 parts to the GPDO.
Well, even listed buildings, you've been telling
me some stuff. You have PD on listed buildings. Yes, you need listed building consent.
Yeah.
So please, whatever you do, just don't go and start extending your grade one, grade two, whatever, listed buildings without listed building consent. Always go and, you know, again, this is what I keep banging on about it, but get professional advice.
Yeah.
I wish people would come and talk to me first before going down the rabbit hole or believing some of the nonsense that's out there.
But that's how I feel about general property investment. I think I wish you'd just invest a little bit into yourself first and get a little bit educated. Yeah. You don't need to, you know, become like a planning geek, but at least get to the point where you can have an intelligent conversation with your people in your team.
Yeah.
You know, I think the thing is with service accommodation is if they do bring in C5, the big question is, and of course you probably won't know the answer, but you may have an opinion, is will grandfather rights exist with C5 service accommodation if they bring in C5?
So grandfather rights do not really exist. People trot out the word, no offence to you.
Certificate of lawfulness.
They trot it. Grandfather rights is something which is often spoken about, but it doesn't really exist.
It kind of does though, doesn't it? Let me just explain what I mean. I'm sure you know, and then you can tell me.
Go
so
on.
If I say grandfather rights or certificate of lawfulness, is if you get a HMO, for example, which I just had one last week, bought a property in an area that is now Article 4, the council have come to me and said, were you doing that I say, yes, here's my contract, and then they go, great.
Okay, so that's not
that's what
I'm talking about. I would not call that grandfather
rights.
What would
you call that?
So I would just call it, it's a lawful use of a building.
Okay, but unless you get what I mean.
No. Well, there is a difference because
grandfather
rights to me suggests that because I had permission in the past to do something, even if you take away those permissions, I still have that permission now.
Okay.
And which is a slightly different.
It is.
Because there used to be able to extend planning. Back in the day, you used to be able to extend planning if you got it.
Right.
And because you've been given it in the past, you could extend that and have grandfather rights because you had planning before, but it was about to lapse and now you've almost renewed your planning.
Although in a way, you had the right to do it under PD rights. Now you don't, but because you did historically. So.
Well, you've never changed. The point is you've never changed. Now, if you took your example of that HMO, if during the last 10 years or however long it is, an HMO beyond enforcement, it's always been 10 years.
Yeah.
All right. And so if you took that during that 10-year period, if you had a break, substantial break, and it was empty, you may have lost that.
Yeah.
And if you remember earlier on, I said the fact that an Article 4 blocks C3 to C4, but does not block C4 to C3.
Yeah.
Now, if you just let that house for 6 months, a month even, to a family and let that family have free reign of that house. You've put that back from C4 to C3.
Yeah.
So you've lost that permitted development or that C4 usage because of what you've done, your usage of the building. So it is critical that if you are doing certificate of lawfulness, and we do them all the time, because Article 4s are coming in, I mean, literally at the time of recording this, in about 4 or 5 days' time, we've got an Article 4 coming in Derby, for example.
Yeah.
And so then you will need that. So the way that I'm trying to educate people there is to make sure that the day before the Article 4 comes in, you've got three or more people.
Yes.
And you can evidence it.
Yeah.
Make sure the day after it has come in, which is the 3rd of May. So so obviously this will go out after the 3rd of May. So that was on the 3rd of May. So make sure on the 2nd of May you've got proof. Make sure on the 4th of May you've also got proof of that Article 4 coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore you can apply then for certificate of lawfulness afterwards to say the fact that my property is now lawful and we've crossed that bridge between the Article 4
I've never had to prove.
Right. Okay. Not at the moment, but what we are finding is that when you're going for licensing, so if you've got compulsory licensing or 5 and above, quite often now, local authorities, when you license, they'll want proof of your planning.
Right.
And also, increasingly, we hear about funders who are also asking for proof of that planning.
Yeah.
So what we're saying now is the fact that, in all honesty, it's probably going to be easier to get your certificate of lawfulness once an Article 4 comes in.
Rather than waiting.
Because you can remember what you did last week.
Yeah.
If I asked you what you did in 2015, you'd probably struggle to remember.
It's true.
As to what
and
you
if
did.
Lost the agreements.
If you've lost the agreements. So another client of ours, she had unfortunately been bereaved, lost her husband.
Yeah.
Husband had dealt with the HMOs. Yeah. And everything else, and she didn't have a clue. She didn't have a Scooby-Doo as to what was going on.
So get the certificate of lawfulness
and
straight
could
away.
Not prove it.
Right.
So we had to go for retrospective planning, and we were successful in that because we could sort of say, look, you know, this is what it is, and this is the proof and stuff like this, and it went through just fine.
So I guess the question is, but I mean, generally speaking, from my experience, what I do is I've got my, I know Article 4's coming in, I'll buy.
Yep.
I'll get my contracts with the tenants. Then when it comes in, I know I'm good.
Yeah.
Because I can show the council, I can get my certificate of lawfulness, don't need planning. And then what normally happens is rents go up because now, and house prices often go up, so I'm sorted. The big question is, if they bring in C5, do you think the same type of thing will be there for serviced accommodation?
Right, you've got to be, C5, I actually think will be limited in time as well. So this is my forecast. I think that C5 will not be 365 days a year.
Right.
So I think that it will be limited, as we have in London. So some cities it may be limited 90 days. I doubt C5 will be all year round as it is in Wales. Yes.
That's going to really upset a lot of people.
Oh yes.
A lot of people have got properties. Yeah. These second homes in Bournemouth.
Now what you may well be able to do is then get you would then have to go to a sui generis use. And to have it for that is my prediction, and I've said that almost from the get go. So that's my gut feeling as to what will happen, because looking elsewhere, Wales, for example. So do look in that. But coming back to Article 4s, I mentioned article4.co.uk, it goes straight through to that part of my site. But the reason I say that is because I'm building an Article 4 for HMO page, which will have every single direction, every single Article 4 in the country. There's 102 of them at the moment in local authorities, and also that includes the ones that are coming in. So the one thing I publish now, and so I've already published the ones coming in the next year, so I publish the dates in which those are coming in.
Very good.
So you can, so anybody can go on
when
to
Article
that.
4 is coming in.
Yes.
Wow.
I've already published that information.
Where is it?
article4.co.uk.
Head down now, guys.
So I've actually put that in, and I'm slowly going through the table.
I've just bought one. Warsaw's coming in.
Yep.
And I've just bought a house or offer accepted, got the memorandum of sale, buying it in Warsaw, turning it into HMO. I'll do that thing you said, though, about the day before, the day after.
I would advise it because...
Makes sense.
For the sake of it. So, you know, you know, and I'm not saying just come to us, and because there are others. I think there's some other decent planning.
Are you the biggest planning consultant in the UK?
I would like to think we're probably one of the fastest growing ones.
But fastest growing, what does that mean? How many people work for you?
18. We've got 18 consultants.
And how many applications do you do a year? What did you do last year?
So last year I dealt with 800 clients.
Jeez. That's a lot.
And so, yeah. So
what's your conversion rate of success when you put in an application?
Over 90%.
Damn.
I don't like refusals.
That's pretty good.
And the way that I approach planning is a good quality application. So I believe in actually making the life of a planning officer easy.
Yeah.
People go, I hear all the time, oh, they're terrible people. You know, I hate them. They're not. They're ordinary people like you and I. They look just like you and I do.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. They may
some of them are stupid.
They may not wear sunglasses on the head all the time, but they are.
They are stupid though. Some of them.
Well,
they know the first thing about planning.
They're only as good as what they know.
Yeah.
They're only as good as what they know.
Yeah.
And so I like to make their life as easy as possible,
which means
putting in good solid applications.
Yeah.
Correctly applied for all the forms and everything else. Question for you. And if you're listening at home, watching this, you can have a think first. How many, speaking to one local authority in Kent, what percentage of their applications are invalid?
As in, they should never have put them in the first place?
Yep, they're invalid. So they've either got rejected at pre-validation,
yeah.
So they're wasting the officer's time on that, or they've got through.
I would say at least 10% are invalid.
As a game show used to say, yeah. Higher.
Go on, tell me.
Over 65%.
Damn. So they're just wasting everybody's time.
So, you know, this is a ridiculous figure.
That is ridiculous.
And to say that these are applications that probably shouldn't have gone in.
No wonder the council are so slow to get back to me, because they've got all these stupid...
This is why we pride ourselves in their applications.
Yeah.
You know, all my consultants are handpicked by myself, and at the end of the day, it's my company, I'm the founder, along with... I have to mention my good wife, Cheryl, who's also the director, so...
Who's lovely, by the way.
Yes, I have to say that she's probably, you know, she is the rock behind the waves. But the point is the fact that I just believe in doing things, making life easy for people.
Yeah, and the rules are okay. People get upset about, oh, planning is so complicated, so hard. That's why England looks so beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, and as long as you learn the rules of the game. Ian Wormsley from The Planning Geek.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.